To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Good morning, everybody. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. I say good morning. It's just gone midday. That tells you how slow I've been in starting my day today. Hope everybody's good. Hope everybody's well. Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast with me, Harry Simeon. Feeling a little bit rough today, I have to say. I feel like I'm at the very beginning stages of catching another cold. Probably got it off my kids again. Slowed down a little bit over the international break. And I always find that when I do that, I then end up feeling unwell afterwards. Maybe I'm just one of those people that needs to go at 100 miles an hour constantly. Well, that is certainly what April is going to bring, because Arsenal have a jam-packed schedule and there's lots and lots for us to cover and to be across and to be traveling to, etc., etc. And we're going to keep you up to date with everything on this, of course. What shall I say? A community podcast? Is that what we call it these days? We've got a lovely group of people that are always tuning in. I'm so, so grateful for it. Obviously, I love it when I hear that the podcast has reached new people and new listeners. But I also love the fact that when I log into the live chat, I know that there are going to be some familiar faces, and I know that this is a part of you guys' routine. So great to see you as always. Steve Stone says, man up, Harry. You know what, mate? You're not wrong. I've got a honey and lemon cup of tea that my wife very kindly made for me just before I departed the house for the man cave. Yeah, a few cold and flu tablets popped in advance. Hopefully we'll be all right. Robert says, Harry's just checking and turning the coals. Not today, mate. Not today. It was quite funny yesterday. I woke up in the morning and my dad had said to me in advance, you know, come round on Monday. I'm going to do a barbecue, get the family round, whatever. And I thought, lovely. And then it started absolutely pelting it down with rain here in North London. And I thought to myself, surely he's going to have like changed his mind. You know, maybe my mum's cooked something else, going to stick something in the oven. I don't know. And I get there and he's put up a gazebo, especially to protect the barbecue. And he's rolled out two barbecues so that he can get through the meat nice and quickly in order to combat the problems caused by the rain. Brilliant stuff. You can take the man out of the village, but you can't take the village out of the man. Good to see. Good morning to everybody else who's joining us in the live chat as well. Great to see you all. Look, on this episode, we're going to focus on that game tomorrow night against Luton Town, which is a really, really important game. And it is one of those games where there's only pressure, because this is a side that if you want to be competing for the Premier League title, quite frankly, you've got to be beaten. And when you think about how difficult it was for us at Kenilworth Road to get all 3 points earlier in the season, and you look at some of the performances that Luton have put in maybe for 80 plus minutes at certain away games and even at home against some of the bigger opposition, you do get the feeling that at some point they're going to get one of these major scalps. So you're always wary of sides like this. They are fighting for their lives. There'll be no excuses from me, by the way, if we don't beat them, because I think this is an absolutely must-win game. And as I keep saying, if you want to win the title, well, you simply have to beat teams of this caliber. But there is pressure and there is a little bit of concern on my part about the condition of some of our players. Having watched the Manchester City game back again in full, there was a few players that I just looked at and I thought, you know, you're fit enough to be on the pitch in some capacity, but how fit are you? And I think the fact that we've got some players that have been long-term absentees back is going to help us with this. And, you know, some of those guys came on at the weekend, Partey, Tomiyasu. Neither of them looked particularly fit either, but Jesus was back. And, OK, Jesus isn't looking 100% at this moment in time, but he'll need to build back up to that because he's had lots of injury problems this season. I just think that we're at a really critical point now in terms of how we manage the group. Now, we talked on yesterday's show when we reviewed the Manchester City game about the importance of having a squad and the importance of having players sitting behind you on the bench as a manager that you can turn to and that you can trust in really difficult moments and scenarios to come on and support you in your sort of collective mission as a group. And I think that's key. But I do think when you look at how jam-packed April is, and it really bloody is. I mean, there's a tweet that Arsenal put out yesterday. Let me just bring it up so that I make sure I'm getting all my dates right. But I just want to show, well, I'm not going to show it to you, but I'll read it out to you guys. This month consists of tomorrow's game against Luton Town. 3 days later, we play Brighton and Hove Albion away from home. 3 days after that, we welcome Bayern Munich to the Emirates Stadium. 5 days after that, we're at home to Aston Villa. 3 days after that, we're away to Bayern Munich. 3 days after that, we're away to Wolves. 3 days after that, we're at home to Chelsea. And 5 days after that, we're away at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. This April month is going to be a slog. It's going to be difficult. Obviously, I'm buzzing and excited that we're in the run for some of these major competitions because that's where you want to be, right? Nobody's sitting here complaining about that. But I think the management of the squad is going to be really, really key and really, really important with regards to how we fare. You got to get the right balance, right? You need to find the right balance between rotating in order to protect people, but also not weakening your team to the point where you're now jeopardizing whether or not you're going to get the points that you need or the results or the outcomes that you need. So it's really, really tough. We're going to get into Mikel Arteta's press conference in just a minute. Steve Stone says he's also drinking tea out of his Arsenal cup as well at the moment. Brilliant stuff. Like literally when you open the cupboard in my kitchen, it's all Arsenal cups. My wife loves it. What else have we got in the live chat? Robert says, from now, this is where Mikel uses his squad. If we don't see Emile Smith-Rowe at any stage, then we know he'll be on his way in the summer. I have to say, Rob, I think he'll be on his way anyway. I just don't think he's far enough up the pecking order. And I think him and Nketiah and Nelson will all be moved on in the summer to generate the funds to maybe bring in probably one really big name attacker, in my opinion. Because we get to these stages in games where we need goals or we need certain qualities. And Mikel Arteta just refuses to consider Emile Smith Rowe. And I don't know why that is. And I'm not suggesting that there's been any falling out or anything like that, because I don't know that. And I don't want to put rumors out there that, you know, not that people pay much attention to what I say, but I don't want to put that kind of narrative out there if I don't know anything. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It feels like his days at Arsenal are numbered. Robert also says, Harry, are you going to Munich? At the moment, I'm not. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to get a ticket. I know that they've announced today that some more tickets will be available tomorrow to those of us that have less away credits, but that is subject to them still being available. So I'm trying not to get my hopes up on that. And at the moment, none of the companies that I work for have commissioned me to go out there. So if I haven't got a ticket and I'm not working, then I'm probably not going to make the trip for nothing. But yeah, I'll be watching from afar, I think, and hoping that we can get the result that we need. I mean, look, I was having this conversation, and I know this is a wider discussion point at the moment about away tickets and stuff like that. My problem that I have right now is that where I'm working a lot of the games, I'm going as media, right? If I buy up the away tickets, a lot of the time you can... Well, first of all, I'm not at the point where I have enough points to be able to get for every game guaranteed. So, you know, I have to wait for those opportunities. But the whole ticket collection thing has made it quite difficult as well, because if they call your ticket to be collected and it's, you know, passed on to somebody else, not for any extortionate amount of money or anything else, just because, I'm working the game, it's very difficult for me to say to people, yeah, we'll do it like this. And then Arsenal go, oh, you've got to come out to whatever country it is that I'm not in to collect the ticket. So it is quite difficult at the moment. And I've not been able to get tickets for away games for quite some time. Like, I've been able to get some, but not the ones that I'd really, really like. And I understand that the system is what it is. And as much as people sit there and they say, you know, it's really unfair and all of this, I do kind of think that there's something in the middle, that like in terms of where we should be, like there is a middle ground to this. So I've got a mate, right? And he won't mind me saying, a good mate of mine called Kiri, who has been going home and away for years and years and years. And I use him as an example because he was going to Wigan away when we were shit. He was going to Burnley away when we were rubbish. He was going to all of these places when Arsenal weren't competitive. And the minute that Arsenal kind of see their fortunes turn around and go on the right path, everybody's like, oh my God, I want an away ticket. And then they say, well, how can I ever get one when he's got X amount of loyalty points and he's way ahead of me in the pecking order? He's always going to get them and I'm not. Well, I actually think he deserves to have them. I think he deserves to have the priority over me because he's done the mileage and the hard yards. But I also think if it continues to be a closed shop, then you'll only ever get the same people going. And then, you know, the opportunities are limited. So I think the solution is somewhere in between. I think the very, very loyal guys that go week in, week out, everywhere and attend themselves and are not buying them and selling them on, most of the time. I think they deserve to have the priority because they've earned that right. But I think then somewhere, maybe if you can allocate a certain amount to people that are trying to build up away points, maybe do a bit of a ballot. I don't know. Maybe that's the way to go. But anyway, I digress on that. Lots and lots of questions and stuff coming through. We'll take some of those a little bit later on. I'm just favoriting some of them and we'll attack them a little bit later on in the show. But for now, let's turn our attention to Mikel Arteta's press conference that he gave this morning ahead of the game against Luton Town. So Mikel Arteta has been speaking about the game tomorrow night. Of course, Arsenal taking on Luton Town in a must-win game. And he started off by giving a fitness update on Bukayo Saka. Now, I was a little bit concerned when I saw Saka come off the other day. He didn't look at 100% for me anyway throughout the game, but I put it down to, you know, he wasn't quite right when he was on international duty, hence why he was sent away. And it was a really difficult game at Manchester City. And I always think when it comes to the return after an international break, whether you've played or not for your country, the fact that you've not played a competitive game of football for a couple of weeks, that training's probably been a little bit different in terms of the routine, players have been missing, etc. I always think that the rhythm and the balance of things is always a little bit off, which is why I hate having big games after international breaks. But when he came off at the weekend, I have to say I was a little bit concerned because he started off by sort of sitting down on the ground, signaling that he had a bit of a problem. Then he was hooked off. And I was thinking to myself, Mikel Arteta would never take Bukayo Saka off in a game of this magnitude unless he felt he had to. And so either it's fatigue and we're really worried about maybe him sort of crossing a red line and ending up injured and sidelined for a period of time, or there is an actual muscular issue here. And because he'd sat down on the ground and he seemed to be holding the back of his leg, I have to say I was a little bit worried. Mikel Arteta, after the game, moved very quickly to kind of shut that down and make the point that it was just fatigue. On Bukayo Saka's fitness, he said, yes, he's fine. Obviously, we haven't trained. We've recovered and have a short live session today to prepare for the game. And we'll see whether he's in the best condition to start or not. When I talk about the idea of managing the squad and rotation, I really do think that we have to seriously consider what we do with Bukayo Saka tomorrow night. But we'll come into that a little bit later on when we do talk about the team and the lineup and all of that stuff. So we'll get to that. He was asked whether there's an opportunity to give him time to recover. And Mikel said, look, we're just thinking about Luton and preparing for the game in the best possible way. And we need to earn the right to beat them. He was also asked if Gabriel Martinelli is fit enough to play 90 minutes. And Mikel said he is because he was available to play against a really tough opponent 3 days ago. Again, we'll train today and we'll see the state of every player and make the right decisions tomorrow. So again, Mikel Arteta not giving too much away. On having his whole squad available now that the games are coming thick and fast, he said, yes, we have discussed that and we have discussed pushing each other and being available to contribute in any way to help us win the game and perform consistently at the level that we need, so that we're going to need everybody. And that's key. Like, I talked loads about that after the Man City game, and the fact that you had a couple of players on the bench, even more than that. In fact, that was probably the strongest Arsenal bench we've seen in ages, and it didn't even have Jurrien Timber on it. But the point I'm trying to make here is that you're going to need to in-game change things. You're going to need to be proactive, preempt problems that are around the corner. And I think Mikel is getting better and better at doing that. And, you know, he's going to need to be able to, A, recognize those things before they become too much of a problem for the team, but also have players available that he can trust to come in high intensity, difficult situations and deliver. And that's what we had at the weekend. And I think that was a massive part of why we were able to get the point at Manchester City the other day. He was asked about playing a different style to get a result at Manchester City. He said, you have to sometimes because you want to adapt. And sometimes you have to do that. You have to have that resilience and leave your ego and ideology aside and the way you have to win the game. The team was mentally really strong and it was really clever the way they did it. He was asked whether he was satisfied with the point. Lots of speculation, but lots of criticism coming Arsenal's way with regards to, you know, maybe how early it looked like or felt like they were not happy with, but I would say content with just getting out of there unscathed. He said, look, you obviously prepare the game to win it when you feel that you have what it takes to go there and win. You want to do it. And if you don't, you're not satisfied. But at the same time, you have to understand how you're growing as a team and be smart enough in the moment to accept something else. Absolutely spot on. I love that. What else have we got here? Just scrolling through it. I mean, the rest of the stuff is pretty generic and not massively relevant to tomorrow's game. So we'll kind of leave that. I do want to touch on this point, though, with regards to Jurrien Timber's recovery. Mikel said he's doing very well. He's back training. He's not far off. But the thing is, it's just that last step. He hasn't played any minutes. So does he need a game with the under-21s, maybe? Does he need two games? We're going to have to see, especially because he's training with us and we need to see how long that will take him. That last part is tricky and sometimes it takes a while. Hopefully he'll be back as soon as possible. He was also asked about his chances in playing for the first team this season. He says, I think he's got a good chance. I don't know the percentage, but I think he has a good chance and he's going to push it as far as he possibly can. So those were the key points there from Mikel Arteta's pre-Luton press conference, which he gave this morning. Is it time to rotate then? I've kind of touched on the point already. I've touched on the point of squad management. I've touched on the point of, you know, maybe needing to manage people's workloads and stuff. And I think this becomes more complex when you know that players are carrying problems and carrying injuries, right? So we know that Bukayo Saka has been carrying an issue for a while. We know that Gabriel Magalhaes has been carrying an issue for a while. We know that Gabriel Jesus has a bit of a suspect knee at the moment. We know that Takahiro Tomiyasu is very susceptible to injury. We know that Thomas Partey is back after a long period on the sidelines, during which he suffered a number of setbacks. So we have to manage all of these guys so, so carefully. And listen, this is one for the medical staff. This is one for Mikel Arteta to be working on really closely with those medical professionals in order to try and establish, and you never really know, do you? But in order to try and establish how much workload you can put on any one individual and the risks that you are taking. So I'm going to reveal my lineup to you in a little bit, but I do really think that there is a case that we do shake it up a little bit for Luton Town. Now, I know there's a bit of a risk to that. And I know, you know, people, if we don't get the result we want, will probably point at that first and foremost and say, well, you made this change, you made that change, you should have played X, Y, Z. I really do think that the squad is strong enough now and we've got enough people available to be able to shake it up a little bit and deal with this difficult period that we're going to have. But I also think that it's not as simple as just making basic rotations when people are all at different and varying fitness levels. So yeah, we're going to have to kind of see how that goes. I do want to take a quick look at the sort of stats and the head-to-head stuff that we always do ahead of a Premier League game on the preview show here. And we'll take a look at that with Luton Town, but it is very, very difficult because there's only one game between these two sides in Premier League history. And that obviously took place earlier this season, Arsenal winning 4-3. It was late and it was great. And Declan Rice was the hero that night. But that's the only meeting between the two sides in the Premier League. If you look at the form guide, Arsenal have won four of their last five. The draw against Manchester City, the most recent result, but that's no disgrace by any stretch of the imagination. Luton Town have picked up two draws in their last five. They have suffered three defeats. But, you know, Luton are a funny old team. They really, really are. I look at Luton and I think sometimes for periods of games, they're absolutely brilliant. And then it's like the batteries run out. I don't really know how to explain it. Like, I felt like when we played them at Kenilworth Road, it was a difficult place to go. The atmosphere was very raucous. I've been really impressed with the Kenny, as it's known on the couple of occasions that I've been there this season. I went when we played. I also went when Spurs played them as well. I was commentating on that game. And I thought the place was electric, really good. And we watched other games on TV when they played Liverpool, when they played Man United, and I thought very, very similar things. So I know they're capable of causing people problems, but I do think that they're a side that generally don't have enough in the tank to play at the level that's required for an entire 90 minutes to be able to get the results against the very big boys. So that might be my famous last words, but I really do think that if Arsenal play even at 80% of their capacity, there's probably very little chance that Luton get anything out of this. They're going to have to play out of their skins. But I do wonder, going back to that rotation point, if we make two changes, do we disrupt our rhythm to a point where we maybe go some way in leveling the playing field? And is that the right move here? It's really, really difficult to say. Obviously, they lost at Spurs at the weekend narrowly by 2-1. They did draw with Nottingham Forest in what was being dubbed as a relegation six-pointer. In the end, they only got one each. That was the last time out. They lost 4-3 away at Bournemouth. They threw away a really commanding lead that day, which is an example of kind of what I'm talking about. You know, the draw with Crystal Palace was the game before that, 1-1, and they lost at home to Aston Villa 3-2. So, yeah, I mean, well, I've seen them as well in other games. I saw them against Newcastle away from home. They went 3-1 up, and I thought, yeah, brilliant. And then they ended up throwing that away. So they seem to be able to have enough to get into these positions, but then maintaining that level throughout is a problem for them. And I think they do lack concentration in key moments. And I think, I don't know whether it's just purely concentration or if it's just the quality of player. You know, it's difficult to kind of play above and beyond what your level is all the time for 90 minutes without ever dropping off. If you look at the season so far, you know, we've won four times as many games than them. They've lost 18. We've lost just four. We're averaging 2.41 goals per match in terms of what we're scoring. They're averaging 1.3, just under 1.43, I beg your pardon, just under 1.5. That's not bad, you know, for a side that are down there. Average goals conceded, though, they're conceding on average more than 2 goals a game, and that should give Arsenal encouragement at the Emirates. Have only managed 2 clean sheets in the season so far. And if I take it on to top player stats, goals, Bukayo Saka in the Premier League is way out in front across these two teams with 13. Elijah Adebayo's in second with 9, just ahead of Kai Havertz, who's in third on 8. When it comes to assists, Bukayo Saka again leads the way with 8. Alfie Doughty is second with 7, and Martin Odegaard has 6 and is in third place. Declan Rice has made the most tackles across the two sides with 58. Bukayo Saka comes in second there. I'm shocked every time I read that every single week. But he is there, and Amari Bell for Luton comes in third across the two teams on the amount of tackles on 50. So what can we expect from Luton? I think we can expect commitment. I think we can expect a physical challenge. I think we can expect some good football at times because they've got some really good technicians within that group. But I think we should have enough. And as I say, I'll never take any opponent for granted. I'll never be cocky. I'll never cross into that realm because I don't think you can afford to do that in the Premier League and when so much is at stake. We saw it last season, teams that we were banking on beating, Southampton, who, you know, we all were pretty confident were going to get relegated, turned up at the Emirates and you know, rocked us, got a 3-3 draw, I think it was. And we ended up, you know, dropping 2 valuable points. So you're not going to catch me sitting here being cocky, being overly confident or anything like that. But you know, if you want to win the league, you have to win these games. It's as simple as that. And there isn't really any margin for error here whatsoever. Manchester City take on Aston Villa during this midweek round, which I think is a potential banana skin, but it's still a game I expect them to win. And Liverpool have Sheffield United, who I expect them to dismantle pretty easily. So, you know, there's no room here for us to be dropping points or anything like that. So it needs a good performance. We'll take it on to the starting lineup now, because I think this is something that is going to spark a lot of debate and a lot of discussion. And I know people will have different opinions on this. So I'm going to share with you guys the 11 that I would pick, given what I've been talking about when it comes to rotation and all the rest of it. Okay, so I think that we need to shuffle the pack a little bit. I really do. And I've made some picks that I don't think everybody's going to agree with. One second, I hate when the screen looks like this. I don't know why it looks like that. There we go. So I've made a few changes to the side, and I know people would disagree with some of these, but hey, this is the way that I think Arsenal should go tomorrow night. So across the back, I would make one change. I think consistency across the back is key. But I think Kivior's had a really heavy workload of late. He, of course, played the games for Poland in the international break, the second of which went to extra time and penalties. And I think he looked a little bit leggy just before he came off at Manchester City. So if possible, I would like to see him given a rest. Maybe Tomiyasu is the premium option here to come in at left back. But again, I thought he lacked a bit of sharpness against Manchester City, and I thought his touch was a little bit off at times. But fortunately, he had kind of the physical attributes required to just make sure that he could keep Jeremy Doku quiet enough in the sort of latter stages of that game. But I really do think this is a different game. I think this is a game in which we're going to have loads of the ball. And I think it's a game in which we're going to probably need to be patient at times in order to try and pull apart a Luton side who will be looking to show their resilient side. So I would probably bring in Zinchenko at left back in this one. I think this is a game that is probably better suited to him, where we probably do need a little bit of guile, a little bit of creativity from deep. And I think that Zinchenko could come into this game and be absolutely fine. Moving into the midfield, I'd make a change there as well. I'd take Jorginho out because, again, I thought he looked a little bit leggy at the weekend. But, you know, you could make the case that for Jorginho, this is a game that suits him much more, the game against Luton, where he's going to get on the ball a lot and he's going to be able to dictate quite a bit. Whereas the City game, where we had very little possession, I think just passed him by for that reason. And as I said on the pod yesterday, because Jorginho doesn't have those outstanding physical attributes, if he isn't getting on the ball much, he isn't really that much of a difference maker. So I would take him out the side and I'd bring Thomas Partey in. I'd start Thomas Partey with a view to him maybe playing an hour. I'm well aware that I don't think he's up to that point yet in his fitness journey where, you know, you can bring him in and say play 90 minutes quite comfortably. I think he's going to need a bit longer, but I'd start him. I'd start him with a view to him playing at least an hour in that midfield. I'd take the shackles off of Declan Rice and allow him to get into those more advanced positions, because I think when you're playing against a side that are probably going to play with a low block, yeah, you need creativity and guile, which we've got in other players, but you also need a strong, powerful runner from deep. And I think Declan Rice showed that when we played them at Kenilworth Road earlier this season. So my midfield three would be Partey, Rice and Odegaard. I'd bring Martinelli back into the side on the left-hand flank because I think that we could do with that directness. I'd leave Kai Havertz up front, because I think we're probably going to need a bit of a presence in the box, again, if we're playing against the low block. And I'd take Bukayo Saka out of the team because I think he really could do with a breather. And I'd play Gabriel Jesus from the right. Gabriel Jesus can do a job on the flanks. People were really critical of him at the weekend. I actually think that the reason, you know, a lot of that came about was maybe because people misunderstood what he was tasked with doing and how much actual defending he had on his plate. So for me, I would play Jesus on the right wing. I think he's more effective from the right wing than he is from the left. I think if you look back over his career, he's played far more football on the right wing than he has on the left wing. And I think, was it Man City in the league at home? I thought he had a really good game that day. So that's the front three I'd go with. Martinelli left, Jesus right, Havertz through the middle, and I'd give Saka a breather. And then you've got your Trossards and you've got your Sakas on the bench and you've got your Jorginhos and you've got your Kivios and your Tomiyasus. And all of a sudden, you've got a really strong squad. You're in Ketias, if you want to put him in that category as well. And all of a sudden, you have a side that can, that I think has enough to win the game, but also you have options from the bench that you could bring on. Fabio Vieira as well has been mentioned in the chat too. So, yeah, that's the way I'd go. Let me know your thoughts in the chat. Let me just run through that once more for those of you listening on audio. Raya in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel and Zinchenko across the back. Partey, Rice and Odegaard in midfield with Martinelli and Jesus either side of Kai Havertz up front. I actually think Kai Havertz could probably do with a bit of a rest at some point as well. But given that Saka seems in more need of it, I think he'd be the one from that front line that I'd prioritise resting this weekend. In terms of my prediction, I'm going to go with Arsenal 2, Luton Town 0. I think we're going to get a two-goal lead in the first period, hopefully. And then I think you'll see Arsenal try and manage the game quite smartly, given what they know is around the corner. And I think you'll see changes if we get to that point that will then maybe disrupt our rhythm and stuff. But, you know, it will, you know, be enough, I think, to get us over the line. But I think it would see us just take our foot off the gas a little bit. I have to say I'm a little bit worried about the whole goal difference thing, because Liverpool are playing the Premier League whipping boys, or one of them, this midweek. So I'm hoping that they don't score too many. But if they do, you know, we'd want to match that or get close to it at least, so that there's not too much damage done with regards to our lead on that front going into the last few games of the season. Okay, so that was my team. I've given you my prediction as well. Let's get on to some of your questions and thoughts from the live chat and from X, because you've been sending them over the last few days as well. Okay, I'm going to start off with the ones from X, because I normally forget those and I end up missing out on them altogether because I get carried away and sucked into the live chat. So live chat, you're going to have to wait a moment. I've got a few really, really interesting questions. The North Bank Arsenal podcast asks, if we can't win the league, who would you prefer out of City and Liverpool? I think it's as easy as ABC, anyone but City, 115 reasons why they need to be stopped. I would actually prefer that City win it, because I look at Liverpool and look, if they go on and win the Premier League title, fair play to them. They've deserved it 100%. Because if you win the title, you invariably are the best team in the league. But I just think, I look at that Liverpool side and I think they're fallible. And I think about where they were last season and, you know, the weaknesses that they had. And they've addressed some of those problems, but not all of those problems. Yet they still seem to be hanging in there when things aren't really looking that great in terms of their performance levels. So the reason I'd say I want City to win it is because if we lose out to City, given what you've mentioned, the charges, the alleged breaches, the fact that they're the reigning treble winners, the fact that they've got the best squad, the fact that, you know, all of those things, I can accept that. I can accept losing out to the best manager in world football and the best squad in world football and the best team in world football. I think I would find it harder to take us losing to a Liverpool side that I don't think are better than us. That's the angle that I'm coming at it from. I'm not saying that, you know, if Liverpool go on and win it, that they don't deserve it and that it's a fluke or anything like that. I think that's unfair. What I am simply saying is that when I look at where they were last season and I look at the weaknesses that I still believe they have, I'll be more disappointed from an Arsenal point of view if we fail to win the title and they won it than I would if Manchester City just went on one of those Manchester City-like runs and just took everything. Now, the debate about Manchester City, the alleged charges, all the rest, the alleged breaches, all the rest of it, that's a completely different conversation. I just think I'd be able to accept losing out to City, kind of like I did last year, easier than I would be losing out to Liverpool. So that's where I'm at on that. Charlie Webb says, the focus has been on Arsenal and Arteta, but do you think people are also failing to give credit to Pep again for changing how City built up, which made our pressing less effective and ultimately made us have to revert to plan B? I think that there were so many sort of tactical tweaks ongoing during that game that took place before that game that would have been sort of pre-planned for by both managers. I think when two managers know each other as well as these two do, you're often going to get scenarios and situations where maybe teams are cancelling each other out. I think Manchester City deserves some credit for the way that they performed up until it came to creating the space for a shot. Because if you watch that game back, which I have, and I watched it live from the stadium. I watched the whole game back and I've watched the first half back again. And what I would say is that for me, when people were talking about Arsenal being pinned back and Arsenal being negative and sitting deep and all of that, part of it was by design. Yeah. You know, there was a decision taken to not overly commit players forward, to not leave certain spaces vulnerable to Manchester City's quality. Of course, that was a conscious decision from Arsenal. But I also think that they were forced into that position by a very, very good Manchester City side who did a very, very good job of not just changing the way that they build up, but also impacting the way that we build up. You know, people kept talking about Kivior and Saliba in the first half, maybe looking a little bit shaky in possession. That was because when they were receiving the ball, there was nowhere to go. Rice was accounted for. Jorginho was accounted for. Saka was accounted for. Jesus was accounted for. And often the only option really was to go long to Havertz and have him compete with a couple of big old centre-halves in an aerial duel. And even if he wins the aerial duel, the players around him still have to get free and get close enough to him to then get on the ball and try and make something happen. So I think City do deserve praise for the way that they were able to kind of strangle us and pin us back and not allow us to build up. But obviously, the criticism seems to have come Arsenal's way. And I think actually the truth is somewhere in between. I think the real story is Manchester City pinned us back but weren't good enough to make us pay for the fact that we were dominated in that sense. But at the same time, you know, I think that Arsenal played the way that they did because they had to. I don't think that Mikel Arteta turned up wanting to play like that. I think he wanted to be cautious. I think he wanted to approach the game slightly differently and he didn't want to give anything cheap away. But I also think he'd have wanted to see his team play a bit more football and it just didn't happen because of other factors that are just not being accounted for, in my opinion, when you're sort of reading and listening to analysis of this game. Fahad says, do you think that Gabriel Jesus will overtake Saka and Martinelli in the pecking order on the wings, especially in Europe? I don't think he'll overtake them. I still think that the best options for us in the wide positions are Saka and Martinelli because of the very specific things that they offer. But I will say this, I think he's an option. And I think with Kai Havertz having kind of settled into the centre forward role quite well, I think that then gives Mikel Arteta a bit of flexibility with regards to the way that he uses Gabriel Jesus. And of the other options, particularly on the right wing, I think Gabriel Jesus is the best one. Like, I would rather Gabriel Jesus played right wing than Leandro Trossard or Reece Nelson. If you're talking left wing, I prefer Leandro Trossard. So I think he's a right wing option for us, Gabriel Jesus. I don't think he's going to overtake those guys. I still think when we're talking about Arsenal's best team, those two are in it. But I think he's an option. And that's something that we've been crying out for a little while. But we couldn't do that because we needed him at centre forward. Now we've got a different option at centre forward. At the moment, he's working quite effectively. You now have that bit of freedom, don't you, to change it up a little bit and maybe utilize Jesus in a slightly different way. Okay, let's take some of your questions then from the live chat. Keep them coming in. Enough of the arguing, guys. What are you arguing for? We all support the same team. Come on. Right, let's take some of these questions. Highbury Ultra says, Harry, can we revisit the idea that I suggested months ago of Mikel Arteta being a more defensive coach than an attacking one? I think it's a massive disservice to him when people say he copies Pep. He's his own man. I think this is a really, really great question and a really, really great wider point. I'm not going to sit here and say that Mikel Arteta is a defensive coach because I think when all goes the way he wants it to go, he prefers to see his team on the front foot. And I actually think his team take quite a few risks with regards to the way that they push defenders into midfield, for example, or midfielders into the forward line, without really thinking twice about it. I think he's been able to do that because he's got the right personnel now, and he sort of takes calculated risks and gambles about how many players he leaves back in certain phases of play. And he relies on the individual brilliance of, you know, your Gabriels and your Salibas and your Whites, and the physical sort of dominance that they can display. He relies on that to kind of get his team out of trouble. But this idea that Mikel Arteta is not a defensive coach at all, I agree with you, is a nonsense. Because when he first came into the club, I think we saw a really pragmatic approach. If you go back to the FA Cup win and you look at the way we set up against Manchester City in the semi-final and then Chelsea in the final, and were able to hit those teams on the break and ultimately lift the trophy, there was an element of that, wasn't there? There was signs that Mikel Arteta wasn't just going to come in and try and play Pep football. He would at times acknowledge and realize that we do need to vary it up. And I think as you develop as a manager and as you learn as a manager, you start to realize that things aren't always black and white. You can have your ideologies and you can have your philosophies, and you want to stick to them wherever possible. But there will be times where you need to adapt, and you need to be realistic about what it is that you have in terms of your players, the qualities they have, the fitness levels, the physical attributes, et cetera, et cetera. What is really encouraging is that Mikel Arteta now, at this moment in time, is showing both sides. He's showing that we can dominate games and we can dominate football matches, but he's also shown, I think, against Manchester City at the weekend and in some other games this season as well, that we can control games to a certain point as much as you possibly can without having the ball. And when I say control, I don't mean having all of the ball. I don't mean restricting your opposition to very little possession. What I mean is being able to control where they have the possession, what areas they're allowed to cross into, and which areas are prohibited, and which areas you're going to make sure that you close the door on. So I think you make a really, really good point. It's a really, really valid point. And I love the fact that we're talking about a manager now who, you know, 3-4 years into his managerial career is showing different sides. And I think that's what you need at the highest level. You need to be tactically adaptable. And Mikel Arteta seems to be that. Great question, mate, and great point. Dr. Pepper says, Arteta has been praised for being a quick learner, but is criticised for rotations. All games coming up are must win. How is Arteta going to put the strongest team on the park and rotate efficiently? Yeah, it's the golden question. If we knew the answer to that question, then we'd know exactly what is required to win the league, but it isn't that simple. I think he's going to have to rotate, but he's going to have to rotate smartly and effectively. Rotation is not just about changing 4 or 5 players each game and hoping that the freshness of those coming in is going to make the difference. You have to think about partnerships. You have to think about combinations. You have to think about the threat that your opposition brings and how that either complements or doesn't a particular player in your side's skill set. So there's so much to consider and so much to think about. It's going to be difficult, but I've got more faith in Mikel Arteta now with regards to his ability to do that than I did maybe 2 years ago. So yeah. Owen says, Arsenal can win the next 9 games, but we pray Liverpool lose points too in order to win the Premier League. Let me be honest with you guys, and I said it the other day, I don't think we're going to win our last 9 games. I don't think we're going to win every single game between now and the end of the season. I think we're going to drop points somewhere, probably at Tottenham, maybe at Manchester United. I don't know. You know, we could easily drop points at Brighton. We could easily drop points at Wolves. It's really, really, I think, tough to sit here and say Arsenal are going to go on and win their last few games. We're going to need the others around us to drop points. Like, that is for me certain. I don't think Arsenal win all the games and put themselves in the mix that way. I think that they have to win as many of their games as possible, probably 8 of the 9. But then they need the others to drop points elsewhere. And that's why I don't make Arsenal favourites to win the Premier League. And I've been saying this for a few weeks, and I keep getting slated by fellow Arsenal fans who have called me negative and all the rest of it. But I really do believe that we need Liverpool to slip up somewhere. It's fact that we need Liverpool to slip up somewhere. But the point I'm making is that we need them to slip up more than just the difference that's between us at this moment in time, because I don't think we're going to win all of our games. That's the way I should have phrased it. Anyway, guys, I am going to leave it there. It is the Easter holiday, so I'm going to spend a bit of time with a boy this afternoon, a little bit later on this afternoon, taking for a kickabout at the park, hopefully before it chucks it down with rain. Thank you for joining me as always. Remember, we're going to be back after the Luton game. It will be probably on Thursday morning because I'm going to be at the game. I'm going to be working on the games. By the time I do interviews, press conferences and all of that and get home, it's going to be pretty late. So Thursday morning, we'll be with you reviewing Luton. Looking forward to that, hopefully. And then, of course, we're going to preview the Brighton game on Friday. So it's the content is coming thick and fast. If I could just ask you before I sign out to leave a like on the video, if you haven't done so already, it really, really does help. Subscribe to the channel if you're new. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review as well. And if you are a TikTok user, please head over to my TikTok. It's just at Harry Simeu. I'm getting close to 10,000 followers on there, and we're posting a lot of content from this pod, but also other bits and pieces that you might find interesting. So please head over there, give it a follow. You can follow me on X as well, at Harry Simeu. You can follow us at TCOAG Pod as well on X, and I'll be back very soon with more Arsenal chat. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. Have a great day. Goodbye.